Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of June. We're going to be talking about coverage of the Iraq War, the first hour of today's program. It's not that less of a story. The issue is how many people are sticking with it and why the number of Iraq-related stories has gone way down in the last few years. Stories about Iraq moving from the first page of newspapers to the inside pages of newspapers, if they run at all. And for long stretches over the past 12 months, Iraq has virtually disappeared from the front pages of the nation's newspapers and from the nightly network newscasts. During the first 10 weeks of 2007, Iraq accounted for 23% of the news for network TV news. In 2008, 3% during that period. On cable networks, it fell from 24% to 1%, according to a recent study by the Project for Excellence in Journalism. And the numbers also went way down for the country's daily front stories about Iraq. And to take just one newspaper here, the Sacramento Bee went down 70% from the same time last year. The daily tracking of 65 newspapers by the Associated Press confirms a dip in page one play throughout the country. We'll talk about this issue this hour of the program, and we have as our guest Professor Carol Rivers. Professor Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University and is the author of many books, including Slick Spins and Fractured Facts, How Cultural Myths Distort the News, Indecent Behavior, also She Works, He Works, How Two-Income Families Are Happy, Healthy, and Thriving, and Camelot, a novel which is set in the Kennedy administration. Her television drama, A Matter of Principle, won a Gabriel Award as one of the best TV dramas of the year, and she contributes regularly to the Boston Globe, LA Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, Newsday, and many other major newspapers, and is a frequent panelist on Boston television stations, is considered an expert on the Kennedy family. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation, or send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Carol Rivers, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
You know, it is pretty amazing, this war that's costing taxpayers $12.5 billion a month, nearly $5,000 a second, is not covered as widely as it was. What in the world is going on?
Well, I think there are several things going on. One is the cutbacks in media for a number of years now. Newspapers have been closing their foreign bureaus. The New York Times noted just recently that there's a massive drop in coverage by the networks. And I think, the financial issue, but also I think perhaps the most salient thing is that a small group of Americans are really bearing the brunt of this war. It's their kids who are dying. It's their kids who are going back, you know, 5-6 times to these war zones, and the rest of the country is really not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
The fascinating thing is, if you go to a restaurant and you just sort of sit down and you listen to what people are talking about, you don't hear anyone talking about the war. They may be talking about the election or, you know, a television show or something of the sort, but it's interesting how Iraq has almost sort of disappeared from American conversation.
Mm-hmm. Is part of the problem that it's an extremely difficult war to cover, that it's so dangerous for journalists, or is that not an excuse?
I don't think that's an excuse, because look at the massive coverage of Vietnam when Vietnam was at its height, and you know that was an extremely dangerous war also, not as dangerous as Iraq at the moment, but I don't think that's the issue. It certainly is part of, adds to the heightening economic problem, because you have to pay for so much security. But I think that's sort of far down the line in terms of what's driving this lack of coverage.
Mm-hmm. What we tend to do right now is celebrate anniversaries. The 5-year anniversary had a whole range of coverage, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and that's the problem, because clearly right now what's happening in Iraq is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
There's less violence. Of course, the media always covers violence. But right now, we really need to know such things as, you know, are the gains really as substantial as the Pentagon is saying they are? Is the Maliki government really functioning? What's happening? Is there any progress between the, you know, the three regions? And those are the kind of things that are going to make a huge difference in terms of the future of Iraq. But that's not as sexy as, you know, the constant suicide bombers.
Right. So do we know those answers to those questions, which are very good ones, or are we completely uninformed when it comes to that?
You know, I think if you are really a dutiful reader and you follow the New York Times and you read The Economist and you, go to the television discussions that are more in detail, you probably know a fair amount. But just the person who's the average person picking up your daily newspaper or maybe, you know, turn on your TV news, no, you don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, the coverage. We had Jeremy Scahill on, who's done some terrific reporting from Iraq, who had a meeting of Iraqi veterans that took place, I'm sure you were aware of it, that was so incredibly poignant. These kids, as he called them, and he's only in his 30s, who've been so damaged by the war, and some of the NPR stories that are running this week of mothers who've lost their sons in Iraq who need each other for support and will never forget this, and that human cost of the war, we hear about some, but there's a huge human cost here.
It's enormous, and you compare this to Vietnam, how, you know, I think it was Life magazine that ran an entire front cover just of pictures of people who've died, and the, you know, enormous coverage in Vietnam of American casualties. And the difference, I think, is social class. It's the draft.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a draft for Iraq, there would be, you know, demonstrations in the streets the way there were in Vietnam. But now, since really the sons and daughters of the middle class on the whole are not being shipped off to war, the country almost has a casual attitude toward this, which is terrible because the toll taken on these young men and women who were sent back time after time after time and now who are suffering traumatic brain injury at a terrible rate. These are things that ought to be on the front page every day, and they're not.
Right. You would think, and I'm wondering why this isn't a huge issue. You know, we're concerned about money. We're having problems with the economy. People are seeing their paychecks not go very far. The price of oil is astronomical. People in this city, there are stories the last couple of days of people having altercations in front of a building that's giving out food for people who have suffered from floods, and there are fights going on over this, something you haven't seen in years. $12.5 billion a month is a huge amount of money. You think that we would be concerned about where our money is going?
This kind of puzzles me because it is true that if we had not spent a nickel in Iraq and had never gone there and used that money, we could have completely repaired our infrastructure.
Mm.
We probably could have developed a green a vehicle that would get us off fossil fuels altogether. So I think it may be that the numbers are just so staggering that people's eyes glaze over. It is puzzling to me that there's not more outrage over the just enormous sums that are being eaten up by the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. So you do think that it would be a completely different situation if there were a draft, and I'm wondering how different it would be.
I think it would be enormously different. I've just actually been reading Rick Perlstein's book, Nixonland, talking about the incredible demonstrations at college campuses across the country. The country was really in an uproar because not only the kids who were draft age, but their families, their middle class and upper middle class families, were starting, you know, going out to join demonstrations, and the country was absolutely swept by this issue. And I do think the difference is that every, you know, young man in that case in America who was of draft age was at risk of getting shipped off to war and dying,
mm-hmm,
for a war that Americans were gradually becoming to believe was not a good war. we now know that the vast majority of Americans feel that Iraq was a huge mistake, and yet there aren't people out in the streets. And I do think it's the issue of the draft that makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. What about being in the middle of a presidential campaign where the candidates have pretty different perspectives on this? Does this bring it front and center just to define these two candidates and their differences? Will that make a difference in putting it back on page one or back in debates or somewhere in the public eye again?
It should, but it's really very interesting that clearly the economy and the price of oil have become, you know, the front and center. And while there's, you know, both candidates, since they do have very, very different views, there's, you know, that's kind of a, it's always mentioned, but it's very clear that the war is not on the front burner in the presidential election. Now, that could change, particularly if something dramatic happens in Iraq, or if there's some kind of a terrorist attack somewhere. That could sort of bring everybody's attention back to the war, but it is really is surprising to me that the war so suddenly dipped almost what seems to be below the radar screen.
Right. Tell me more about the networks cutting back on their foreign coverage. If there ever was a time for pretty involved and astute and good foreign coverage, it certainly is now. Is it too expensive for them, or do they think that the public doesn't have any interest in this, or what's going on?
I think both. The New York Times had a story the other day showing that the evening newscast had massively scaled back. It said halfway into 2008, the three newscasts have shown 181 weekday minutes of coverage compared with 1,157 minutes for all of 2007. And CBS has devoted the least coverage. And it's interesting because the correspondents themselves are now starting to publicly complain and saying it's a problem. And there was a vice president at CBS News. It's not keeping a very, very large bureau in Baghdad. And he just says the CBS correspondents get in there very quickly when the story merits it. But quite clearly, the violence, the dip in the violence has made the newscast think, well, we don't have to be there every day because, you know, it's not going to be another huge explosion or huge visual story. Now it's the political stuff and the negotiating maneuvering, so we don't have to be there as much. I think that's you know, a very bad way to look at it, because I think this is even more critical to find out what's really happening between these various, you know, groups. And the things are changing all the time. You know,
right.
who's dealing with who? Are the Sadrists getting on with the government this week or not? And what's happening with the Kurds? These are all hugely important stories, but they're not visual stories.
Mm-hmm. It strikes me, and maybe this is just a public radio audience that's keenly interested in this issue, but it strikes me that there are a number of people who are following this very, very closely and would welcome coverage. Is this just sort of public radio and public television viewership, or do you think that if we were seeing terrific reporting that the public would remain interested in these stories?
That's a really good question. I hope that's true. I do worry that the public's attention span is very short. It's summer.
Right.
People aren't, you know, paying that much attention to the news, even though I think they were during the primaries, but now the general election is sort of in the doldrums. I'm not sure, but I do think that, you know, there's a degree to which the press does have to be the watchdogs, and whether, you know, people are going to be tuning in to Iraq as much as they're going to be tuning in to, you know, Britney Spears stories, we do have an obligation, I think, in the media to present the subtleties of these things, because they're going to affect our lives for a long, long time.
Right. Phone calls for you in a moment. All our lines are filled. Professor Carol Rivers, professor of journalism at Boston University College of Communications, is our guest. She's also the author of a number of books, including Slick Spins and Fractured Facts, How Cultural Myths Distort the News. Indecent Behavior, She Works, He Works, How Two Income Families Are Happy, Healthy, and Thriving, and Camelot, which is a novel set in the Kennedy administration. Our phone number, keep it in mind as we go through calls until 10 for this guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers 414-227-2050. Or you could send an email if you'd like, and that is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, 800-486-8655. And start with John from Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, I disagree with your guest in a lot of ways. I do read the New York Times every day, and I focus on what's going on in Iraq. And the death toll is constant. The explosions are constant. The violence is down by 70%. So if it was 200 attacks a day, which was approximately what it was a year ago, it's 60 attacks per day. And people are being killed. Explosives are going off all over the place. And if it were just that they had diminished the number of correspondents in Baghdad, you wouldn't have this full court press of anything even remotely to do with Iraq being suppressed. In other words, my assertion is the corporations don't want to cover this. They're going to go along with the government because the government wants a successful occupation of Iraq. And the corporations are not unbiased actors in this. For example, the SOFA arrangements are not being dealt with the press at all. That's a way of circumventing our treaty formulation with the U.S. Senate. In other words, the U.S. wants the right to initiate all sorts of hostilities without asking the Iraqi government. And they're trying to get around a treaty by using the SOFA mechanism, the status of forces arrangement. The oil contracts, that's just gone through. There should be an uproar. We shouldn't be awarding anybody, there shouldn't be any American corporations getting oil contracts while we're the invader and occupier there. The torture findings from the Justice Department that came out about 2 weeks ago, hundreds of FBI agents fingered the CIA for torturing at Abu Ghraib. Nothing about that. The Rockefeller report, 5 years we waited for the Rockefeller report to tell us what were the reasons for getting into this damn war, and they completely suppressed that. This morning, the GAO said the Bush administration is lying. Only 10% of the Iraqi forces are able to operate independently. The Bush administration is claiming 70%. This has nothing to do with what's happening in Iraq. These are ancillary stories that should focus the public on it. They want to turn off the public. They want us to be stupid so they can go ahead with what they want to do.
Professor Rivers.
Well, I think there's no question that there are, you know, powerful forces, and certainly the Bush administration has a narrative that it wants out, and it keeps pushing this narrative. I'm probably less conspiratorial. I mean, I really don't think that, you know, the newspapers and the reporters are, you know, joining in this effort. I do think that all these things have been reported. But should people be in an uproar? Yes, indeed, they should. But I think that I do believe that if more American kids from middle and upper class families were dying in Iraq, we would see more coverage. That being said, yes, there certainly is an effort by the administration to suppress a lot of these things. But I'm not a conspirator. I believe that that there is more laziness, inattention, lack of spending money, and all these other things than some kind of active conspiracy of the American media not to cover the story truthfully.
John, thanks for the call. Larry from Madison, hi.
Thank you. A small but perhaps important reason that there's not more press coverage of Iraq is that there's an occupation. It's not a war. The war was won in 2003 in a few days. Iraq now is an occupied country. A war presents a gripping suspense. I mean, a nation sees that it could lose. So it's vitally interested in every step of a war. But most occupations come to an end because the native population forces the occupier out. And it seems to me that the American public realizes that the end is already written. The United States will withdraw. Question is when. And so perhaps there's just not the suspense. Maybe a poor analogy would be to have less of a motive to read a novel if you know how it ends.
I think that's very true. I think, you know, a lot of news is about narratives, and the narrative of shock and awe, and the narrative of, you know, the Saddam statue falling was a big narrative. And then, again, the narrative of we're losing so many American casualties, the war is awful. That was a pretty compelling narrative. Now we are down to the sort of occupation narrative. We're down to a much more mixed picture. Yes, as the former caller said, there's lots of violence, but more often the victims of the violence are Iraqi. There are fewer American casualties.
Mm-hmm.
And the occupation is a narrative that's kind of plotting. It's a step forward here, a step back here. And that narrative is not as compelling. It should be, because the economics of it, the politics of it, it is going to be an incredible historical story. But as a day-to-day narrative, that's absolutely right. It doesn't seem to be as compelling.
Mm-hmm. Larry, you had something else?
One quick comment.
Sure.
Joseph Stiglitz, the economist, puts the cost of this occupation far higher than you have indicated. He puts it at about $25 billion a month. That is, he's figuring in the future costs of the occupation long after the occupation ends. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. It's interesting, the choice of words, Larry, that Larry used, Professor Rivers, that he calls it an occupation. What does the press on the whole call this, a war or an occupation, and does it make a difference what words we use?
It's very interesting. We do call it the Iraq War,
mm-hmm.
and it is, at this point, probably more aptly called an occupation. But here you get into the semantics of, war terms, and it is it gets very tricky, because the Bush administration certainly doesn't want this to be called the Iraqi occupation. They much prefer the term Iraq War, because that sounds so much more active and also so much more righteous. We are defending liberty, et cetera, et cetera. So I think these terms, I think actually the American press should really look more closely at the terms it uses about what's really happening in Iraq at the moment. And I do think the fact that the American people have turned away from the war, they have decided the war is not worth fighting. I think they do feel, I think the analogy was very good of, they know the ending. We are going to get out. We're not going to stay in Iraq for 100 years. We're going to get out. They know the ending. And that's why, in many ways, they've kind of turned off of the coverage.
We go to Frank from Madison next. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Thank you for the very fine guest. And your previous two callers made much of my point, but I would like to say that it was an astounding thing that there was a shutdown on anything like realistic general reporting on and succeeding the last testimony by Petraeus. So there's been an occasional telling report from the New York Times, which has partly learned its lesson about official narratives, and they have had, as well as The Nation and The Guardian, an excellent article on the preparations for a permanent occupation of Iraq. And the Iraqi government has been resisting giving the United States license to have its 58 permanent bases. So the American military and foreign policy is still presumed that we are going to be in Iraq. And that is such an important geopolitical chokehold that I don't think that there is an intention to leave. Now, whether it's practical to expect to stay is another question. but there was a shutdown of anything like critical reporting on Iraq, and the dramatically deteriorating situation in Afghanistan seems not to get anyone's attention. There aren't even reporters there. So
I don't think they were just
not trying to disturb the American people. I think it was a coordinated effort to direct the gaze elsewhere. So thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
You know, I think that knowing the media as I do, the idea that there's a coordinated effort of the media to direct the gaze of the American people is not true. I think there are certain media organizations that do have that agenda and feel the way. There are others that do not. But I do think the reporting on these whole issues of the status of forces treaty, the idea that we're negotiating for what looks like an extended period of stay there. I must say I was pleased that the fact that American oil companies are getting no-bid contracts did seem to get fairly decent coverage. But I think there really needs to be much more coverage about what's going on with the political and economic goings-on in what the Bush administration is negotiating with the Iraqis, because we may find ourselves having formed agreements. The next president may come in and find himself handcuffed by arrangements being made by an extremely unpopular president about an extremely unpopular war. And I think the media very much needs to be alerting Americans to this problem.
And what Frank says about Afghanistan is so true. I was amazed to see that NBC sent Brian Williams to Afghanistan. The report's running this week because of Tim Russert's death. But this is something that we know almost nothing about. It simply is not covered, and things are not going swimmingly there.
They're going very poorly, and in fact, really, when you're thinking about the war on terror, Iraq has been a sideshow, except to the degree that our invasion prompted, you know, more terrorists to be recruited. But, you know, we really do know that the lawless Pakistani regions, tribal regions, are where al-Qaeda has its headquarters. It's probably where Osama bin Laden is. The Taliban are coming back. And this really should be, it should have been our attention first off. Instead of going into Iraq, we should have paid our attention to Afghanistan. And the fact that we are not covering an area where much is happening, where perhaps if there's a resurgence of the terror network, this is where it's happening, and we're not covering it to the degree that we should. It is stunning, and I think that what I'm hoping is that we're beginning to see some more attention directed there, but we need to have much more presence in terms of media in Afghanistan.
Yeah. One of the huge stories there, as you're well aware, is the upsurge in the growth of poppies. I saw this really dramatic story that I wonder, why in the world aren't we hearing more about that, that there are attempts to get rid of the poppy fields, to, you know, get rid of all of them, and the farmers are facing such desperate circumstances that they're selling their daughters, for heaven's sake, in order to make a living. What a story that is.
Yes, and again, the economics and the geopolitical aspects of Afghanistan have not been really covered very well, and it's extremely important, because if you remember, the Taliban, when they ruled Afghanistan, had actually been able to downplay some of the poppy production, but now they are actually fomenting it, because that drug money that's coming out of these poppy fields is being used to finance a lot of terror around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, we need to cover that, because the next 9/11 attack, wherever it happens, could well be financed by, you know, these farmers and by these in these tribal areas. What's going on there is just critical to our own well-being, and yet we sort of seeing it as far-flung and out there, and we need to have much more journalistic attention.
Yeah, interesting. Do you have any idea, Professor Rivers, where all that poppy drug money is going? Have you seen a good report on that?
I have not seen a good report. I've seen some reports, but I've not seen a really in-depth report. Of course, it's hard to track.
Right.
You know, these things are all done through back channel, back door, things that are not available often to journalists. But I certainly would like to see more reporting on where this income is going and how it's being funneled out through Terror Network, and particularly in Europe, where there clearly are a very effective money networks, and they're very hard to close down.
Right. Ed from West Allis, hi.
We've had 8 failed presidential administrations since the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and ostensibly the main reason is because we have this interlocking power between the presidency and the military. And what Kennedy gave, what Kennedy had, was a good degree of skepticism of the military. And this war occurred primarily because no one dissented from the military line and from the political line that Bush gave for the war. And I just want to try, since your guest is an expert on the Kennedy family, I want her assessment of where this nation has really come since his assassination, because we have seen the ascendancy of the military almost to the point of total control in this nation.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's certainly true that John Kennedy had a healthy skepticism, which Lyndon Johnson unfortunately did not. And I do believe that had Kennedy lived, he would not have done the same kind of escalation in Vietnam that Lyndon Johnson did because of that skepticism. But what's interesting to me now is that the military today contains an enormous number of skeptics. In fact, when it came to the Iraq War, you saw General Eric Shinseki saying to Bush and to the fellow members of the Chiefs of Staff, we can't go into Iraq unless we go with 450,000 troops. This is nuts to try to go in there with few troops. And I think there's a huge split in the military that today the American military is very skeptical about what's happening in there. Basically, many military people are saying, look, the wheels are coming off the U.S. military. We're overextended. Mm. We should get out of Iraq. So I think it has really been more, in the case of the Bush administration, the political leadership, the civilian political leadership, and especially the neocons, who were pushing a war that many in the armed services were very, very skeptical about. So I don't think it's military control. I think there's a lot of sanity in our military today, certain many aspects of it, but there are aspects of our political leaders that are simply pushing this view that everything can be solved by military might and not by diplomacy.
Thank you, Ed, for your call. Cindy from Menominee, hi. Hi, Cindy. Got to turn that radio down. We'll give you a second, and then you'll have to call back. Cindy? Okay, there you are. Hi.
I just wanted to say that I didn't think it was journalists who were shutting down. I think it was the administration, basically, and maybe the corporations who have taken over. But I don't ever blame it on journalists pretty much for myself. This was part of a conversation you're having a little earlier. Sorry.
Well, I think that it is true that, you know, that the corporatization of journalism has not been good, in the sense I do think that corporations have more power than they should, but I don't think it is a sinister group of corporations that are all shutting down journalism. I think it's extremely complicated, and one of the complications is the expense of foreign coverage. Another, I think, is the American public, in fact, large segments of the American public, and this may have always been true, have little interest in foreign affairs. You look at even top-line newspapers now are putting celebrity stories, sort of trivia stories, stories about entertainment on their front pages. I mean, when you think about the coverage of the Anna Nicole Smith story vis-a-vis Iraq, you're also seeing a public that is being, and it may be because it's being fed a lot of this junk, but it's also accepting a lot of this stuff. But again, I do think if you look back at the Vietnam era, there was an enormous outcry from the public about more and more and more news about what was happening there. That simply, it does not exist right now, and it should.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to hear the number of correspondents. Now, Richard Engler, we had him on a couple of weeks ago, but he was also on the news one night saying, you need to pay attention to this. I can't believe these stories aren't getting on the air. And the chief foreign correspondent for CBS News on The Daily Show saying, I'm holding the armor-piercing RPG, referring to the initials for rocket-propelled grenade. It's aimed at the bureau chief, and if you don't put my story on the air, I'm going to pull the trigger.
It's a real problem. I mean, we have an enormous problem with the media at the moment. We have newspapers in dire financial straits. News holes being cut. People are now thinking of whole new ways to finance the gathering of news. You know, people think, should we have foundations buying newspapers? I've just seen a foundation has now started a fund for investigative reporting, which newspapers weren't doing anymore. And we're looking at the networks. We're seeing the news divisions getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And you look at cable news, and cable news is just filled with, you know, sort of endless opinion talk
right.
shows.
Right.
So, you know, the amount of time given paid to real reporters mm-hmm. to cover real news is diminishing, I think, drastically and sadly.
Yeah. More phone calls in just one moment at 800-486-8655. Professor Carol Rivers, professor of journalism at Boston University and the author of several books, is joining us this hour to look at the coverage of Iraq, particularly on the network news and also in newspapers. And this has been looked at by a number of people. The television consultant who monitors the three network evening newscasts says that coverage of Iraq has been massively scaled back this year, and there have been other studies done by Pew Research that really counted how many minutes were on the network news and on cable and looked at the placement of Iraq stories, if there were any, in newspapers all over the country, the major papers and also the local papers. So we're asking, where is Iraq in news coverage? 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And we also have an email that you could use, which is talk@wpr.org. Cindy, thanks for your call. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, don't know if you saw the public editor piece in the New York Times this past Sunday, the title Pantsuits and the Presidency, and it starts like this. Some supporters of Hillary Clinton believe that sexism colored news coverage of her presidential campaign. The New York Times reported that there are many proposing boycotts of cable news networks and that a media hall of shame has been created by the National Organization for Women. We're going to be looking at sexism and determining whether or not that was a huge issue in the fact that she didn't win the nomination here. And also look more broadly at the number of women. Our guest makes a point that Republican moderate women in the House and in the Senate have really fallen dramatically in the past few elections. So we'll talk about why that's the case. It should be a very good hour. Back to your phone calls for Professor Carol Rivers, professor of journalism at Boston University. 800-486-8655 is our number. And Dennis from Eau Claire is next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I really enjoy the program, and I wanted to chime in a little bit that, you know, you hear a lot of this stuff. It seems like when the editors release some of the stuff, it's mostly of the negative stuff. And I had a friend that came back from Iraq outside of Baghdad. He was stationed, and he said there's so much good stuff going on, but the bottom line is that stuff people don't listen to it. And I think that has, and I turn it off. I mean, I think you guys had a program on maybe about 2 weeks ago. It was about, you had a soldier, can't remember everything about it, but they just went into the positive things about building schools and stuff. It was really good, and I think I enjoy that more. I mean, I think from the beginning of this year, the last 4 or 5 months, it's not the same over there. Something's going on, and he basically, my friend said that they're taking control of their country. And so I guess that's, I just wanted to have a comment like that and enjoyed the program and just wanted to say that.
Thanks, Janice.
Well, you know, it's true that Iraq is such a big country. It's as big as Texas. And there are areas where, you know, American soldiers are cooperating with local people, doing extremely good things. And, of course, as we know, good news isn't usually much news. So we do tend to focus more on the, you know, the bad stuff. But it is the big problem is the overall question. I mean, if you remember in Vietnam, there was lots of very good stuff going on at the village level. People were digging wells, and Americans were helping, you know, helping people economically. The problem was that overall, the whole big picture was that the war was not sustainable. So that's a real question in Iraq. Despite all the very good things our troops are doing in individual villages and individual people, what's the entire picture? Is Iraq now beginning to become a sort of a sustainable entity, pulling Shia and Sunni and Kurd together, or is it all a house of cards that's going to simply collapse? And that's what the American people need to know.
Dennis, thanks for your call. Gary from Fitchburg, hi.
Hi. Well, as far as good things going on in Iraq, that's nice, but we shouldn't have been there in the first place. We have we need schools here to be built. I know that our country is paying for karate schools in Iraq, so to get some of the young people off the streets, you know, we're paying for karate schools, so our tax dollars are teaching karate to these young Iraqis. Also, we're paying 200,000 men to build roads so they will not attack our troops. This is money that should be used here. We need infrastructure work on our roads, on our bridges. We have no high-speed trains. Well, many nations are on their fourth generation of high-speed trains. As far as poppies being grown in Afghanistan, I don't care what the farmers do in Afghanistan. I wouldn't like someone, if I was a farmer here, I wouldn't like someone from Russia or somewhere else coming over here and telling me what to do with my land. I think when you look at what's going on with our country, the country is beyond bankruptcy by trillions of dollars. And you look around the world, you see countries like China, Brazil, Russia, even little old Vietnam are having GDP growth of 10, 11, 12, 14, 16%. Well, our GDP numbers are manipulated by the government, as well as the CPI, Consumer Price Index, all government disinformation. The country is imploding. We have been hollowed out. We have no manufacturing sector. The housing sector is rolling over and plummeting. Wall Street just laid off 88,000 employees on Wall Street. So while our country is heading into a depression, we are building roads in Iraq, building schools in Iraq, building karate. You know, it's mm-hmm. ridiculous. Anyway, those are my comments. And this is why newspapers are not doing well these days, because they don't tell the truth. People should be jumping up and down about this stuff, including the Democratic Party, which Harry Reid is like Mr. Whipple. People should be in the streets.
Professor Rivers.
Well, I think that unfortunately newspapers aren't losing circulation because they're not telling the truth. They're losing circulation because of Craigslist and the internet, and that's a whole economic issue that's a discussion for another time. But I certainly think that the American people, it seems as a whole, have decided that the Iraq War is too expensive, and want it to end. And I think that we are in a very difficult economic situation. I don't know if we're imploding, but we certainly are teetering at the edge of recession. And I think a lot of economists would say it is indeed madness to be expending the kind of money we are expending in Iraq when our bridges are collapsing. And I think that seems to be a sentiment that's widely held in America. I wonder if people aren't out in the streets yet. They see the Bush administration is coming to an end. They're exhausted. They are hoping that a new administration will take a different tack and things may be better. But it certainly is puzzling to see so much of American treasure being spent on Iraq while our problems are so enormous.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gary, for your call. Rich from Sullivan, hi.
Good morning. Earlier in this program, your guest said that if I were listening carefully at the time, because I'm on a hike with my dogs at the moment, but and it's a beautiful June day here in Wisconsin, by the way, but she said, well, the American people do know the outcome of this, that eventually we're going to leave. And I'm calling simply to say I'm glad she's so sure of that, because the saber rattling around not just Iraq and Afghanistan, but now with regard to Iran must be stopped, has some of us extremely nervous, because one of the ways in which various groups of politicians and the industrial military complex, I'm sorry, I believe in that, I believe Eisenhower was right about that. I don't think he was mistaken about that. One of the ways of rallying the public and turning people patriotic is to do something ridiculous like invading Iraq. And as ridiculous as it seems to say, there may be plans afoot to invade or to bomb or to support our ally, Israel, to bomb Iran, makes me say your guest is a very, very nice lady, but she has too much confidence in the rationality of people.
Oh, I don't think I have a lot of confidence in the rational people, and I do share the concern that we might get an October surprise. I don't think we will, but it is with this administration, sort of nothing is beyond the pale. The reason I say that we are going to be leaving Iraq is because we simply don't have the troops. Who are we going to keep sending? People are going to keep sending the same people for the 12th or 13th deployment until they're blown up or completely psychotic. So I think that everybody admits, even many in the military, that even those who would like to stay in Iraq for a long, long time, we simply haven't got the troops to do that. We certainly don't have the troops to invade Iran. A bombing sortie to rally the American people and to perhaps elect another Republican administration, do I put that beyond the pale? No, I don't, because mm-hmm. there is indeed a military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have power, and I think this administration has showed us that they will take all sorts of gambles and all sorts of really wrong moves, put American troops in harm's way to support not only the military-industrial complex, but their own sort of fantastical ideas of reforming the world. Mm. So I don't think I'm naive, but I do think that we cannot stay. We simply cannot stay in Iraq, because we haven't the facilities to do so.
Mm-hmm. And there's a story that needs a whole lot of coverage. That Iran Israel story needs to need that day by day. We're not getting it. Just a comment. We don't have time probably for a response. I disagree that the incorporation of the news media has not affected coverage, as news organizations have become just another profit center as part of large media conglomerates. There's been increased pressure to cut costs to support profits, resulting in staffing being cut to the point where many news providers can no longer afford to function as they were intended.
Oh, this, that's true. I think it's not sort of a political conspiracy. It is an economic conspiracy, if you will. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Thanks, Wayne, for that comment from San Mateo, California, native Wisconsinite. Well, I'm glad we found you, Professor Rivers. Join us again.
Well, thank you. I would really like to.
Good. Thanks so much. Professor Carol Rivers, professor of journalism at Boston University, the author of several books looking at where is the coverage of Iraq? Where is the coverage of Afghanistan? Where is the coverage of Iran? Our question of this hour. And thanks for all of your calls. We were jammed with calls today. So at least public radio is interested in the issue, right? Here's to you. Thanks so much to Carmen Jackson for producing this program and to John Anderson for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News ahead will return. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.